Krishna. Just my eye caught something we read yesterday. A devotee should always remain atmavan, or situated in his spiritual position. He should not forget that his main concern is to make advancement in spiritual life or Krishna consciousness. And he should not ignorantly identify himself with the body or the mind. Atma means the body or the mind, but here the word atmavan especially means that one should be self-possessed. He should always remain in the pure consciousness that he is a spirit soul and not the material body or the mind. That will make him progress confidently in Krishna consciousness. So the teachings that Kapila Muni are giving to Devahuti are, they are bhakti, but they are mixed with Sankhya and yoga. Sankhya is a very analytical way of studying the nature of the material world and breaking it down into its elements. And such detachment is required in Sankhya. Breaking the material world intellectually down into the elements and seeing that the spirit soul has nothing to do in the material world, and then the soul, or the person, meditating upon the super soul based on this understanding. And that meditation upon the super soul is basically, we'll hear how that is done. But first let me offer prayers. Om Ganatminandasya Jana Jana Sulakaya Chakshu Samilitan Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Upakadamayam Dadati Sapanantikam Manjakavatu Vyastra Kripa Sindhu Vaimacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. So the last verse that we read yesterday was this, describing this analytical process and how one is moving. First the process, one has to do so many practical things. And again, everything is based on the hearing and chanting about Krishna. Because without directly hearing and chanting about Krishna, we don't get the taste to go upward towards that spiritual realm. So that is really the essence of the process. So in addition, though, especially in here in this practice of Sankhya Yoga, there are instructions of how one should act. So the last verse we read yesterday was, one's seeing powers should be increased through knowledge of spirit and matter. So one should learn how to not only see gross matter, and one should not unnecessarily identify himself with the body and thus become attracted by bodily relationships. So now when we view things, we only see matter. Even when we look at people, we only see their bodies. We don't see the difference between the soul and the body. We don't see the difference between dead matter and seemingly live matter. What is the difference between something that's dead, whether it's a dead body or a dead piece of wood or a dead floor? What's the difference between that and a person or an animal that's alive and walking and roaring? So the difference is not in the earth, in the water, in the fire, the air, in the ether, that the atoms that make up the matter, but the difference is in the presence of the soul. So it is actually the soul that gives life, that it makes it appear that a dead body is alive. And as soon as the soul leaves, the dead body is just that, a dead body. So it is the soul, the life is the property of the soul. The energy is the property of the soul. It is not the property of the body. The consciousness is the property of the soul. It is not the property of the body. So we should increase, Kapila Muni is saying, through knowledge of spirit and matter, we should increase our ability to see in this way. Text 10. Nivritta buddhya vistano duri bhutanya darshana upalabhyat manatmanam chakshushas chakshusevakamatmadrik. So as one practices, and the same thing happens, but even in still a more wonderful way, when one doesn't practice Sankhya, but practices directly bhakti. But the same thing that happens, but in the verses, and especially the purport, Prabhupada's going to explain how these items, which are explained by Kapila Muni in relationship with Sankhya Yoga, how the same things are accomplished in Bhakti Yoga. How the same thing is accomplished and the specific angle that one looks at these elements in Bhakti Yoga. So in text 10, so we heard about the, first of all, the process, and then in the last verse, how to come to the doorway of liberation, which means seeing the difference between the soul and the body, and this is actually born of the mode of goodness. And then to go beyond the doorway or through the doorway to liberation. Then text 10 describes, one should be situated in the transcendental position. That means beyond matter. Beyond the stages of material consciousness. And should be aloof from all other conceptions of life. Thus realizing freedom from false ego, one should see his own self just as one sees the sun in the sky, as clearly and as definitively as one can see the sun in the sky, one should see one's own self, the consciousness within the body, the soul. And then, when one is so aware, as clearly as one can see the sun in the sky, when one is can see the soul, he is free from material consciousness. So Prabhupada explains this word, chakshush sevakam. Arka means what? What is arka? Arka. The sun. And chakshus, the eyes, just as one sees the sun. So Prabhupada explains this word. Chakshus sevakam. As we can see the sun without a doubt. One who is fully developed in Krishna consciousness sees Krishna and his energies. By this vision, one becomes atmadrik, or self-realized. When the false ego of identifying the body with the self is removed, actual vision of life is perceived. So what is it that stops us from seeing the soul? What is it that stops us from seeing our real life, living in our real life? That is ahankara, or false ego. And what is the false ego caused by? It is the first thing that we get when we are in the material world. And what is it caused by? This enjoying spirit. And what is the enjoying spirit caused by? Our aversion to loving service to Krishna. So, but when one sees the soul and understands he's not the body, that, and understands that he's a servant of Krishna, and understands that everything is Krishna's energy, Krishna and Krishna's energy, then actual vision of life is perceivable. That means one knows who one is, and who are we? We are servants of Krishna. Jeev Krishna Das, Evishvas. Jiva Swarup Hoy Krishner Nitya Das. When the false ego of identifying the body with the self is removed, actual vision of life is perceived. The senses therefore also become purified. Real service of the Lord begins when the senses are purified. One does not have to stop the activities of the senses. But the false ego of identifying with the body has to be removed. then the senses automatically become purified. And with purified senses, one can actually discharge devotional service. So what does one who is actually on this liberated platform, what does he see? A liberated soul realizes the absolute personality of Godhead. What does he realize? He realizes the personality of Godhead, who is transcendental and who is manifest as a reflection even in the false ego. That means that there is nothing other than Krishna in existence. Krishna meaning Krishna is energies. Krishna is aloof in one sense. He's aloof because he never steps one step out of where? Vrindavan. Vrindavan. Vrindavanam pratyaja paramekam nagacchati. Not one step out of Vrindavan. But through his expansions, Kala Angsa, and his energies, his expansions and expansions of his expansions, and his energies, Mama Tejo Angsa Sambhava, he pervades and supports the entire universe. So everything that we see, even our own false ego, which we are viewing the universe through, is also Krishna, a reflection of Krishna. We can't do anything, see anything, even be in maya, even kill, even do the wrong thing, steal and cheat and lie, break the principles, anything. We can't do anything without Krishna, or without it happening within Krishna. So, a liberated soul, he realizes the absolute personality of Godhead. That absolute means that there is nothing separate from him. He is transcendental and he is manifest as a reflection, even in the false ego. So a reflection of Krishna, an aspect of Krishna, Krishna's energy, just like a reflection of something is the energy. Say if we take, this example will be given later, if we take the sunlight and we take a mirror, and the Gurukula, the boys used to do this, they used to shine it in each other's eyes from across like that. Did you do that when you were a kid too? So that reflection that goes into our eyes and causes us, disables our ability to see, is a reflection of the sun. So similarly, the false ego is the energy also of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the support of the material cause. What is the ultimate material cause? Is pradhan. We heard about this before. So he is the one supporting it, maintaining it. And he enters into everything through his energy, and that's the super soul, as Chiradaksha Vishnu. He is absolute, one without a second, and he is the eyes of the illusory energy. Here's Prabhupada's purport. So this is all giving us information about Krishna and how he pervades and supports the entire material world so that we can directly begin awakening within our heart the direct desire to serve him directly, not indirectly, by serving the reflection, the energy, thinking that we are the center, the enjoyer. He has power. He can enjoy. We have no power. How can we enjoy? How can we be enjoyers? To be able to enjoy, you have to have power. In the material world, what is the symbol of the ability to enjoy? Money. Money means power. That's why people are interested in money. They're interested in power, because power means the power to enjoy. On the positive side, you can have anything you want. And on the negative side, you can remove anything you don't want. Then you can enjoy. So here in the material world, we, although we're trying to be enjoyers, we have no ability to enjoy because we ultimately don't have power to enjoy. But now we're learning about Krishna's power through the process of Sankhya. And really through the process of bhakti, because in bhakti we are hearing about it. Through the Bhagavatam, through hearing Kapila Muni's teachings, hearing Prabhupada and the Acharya's purports, their commentaries, we are hearing about it and learning these things. So therefore, who is the enjoyer? Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaran, that it is me who is the Sarvaloka Mahesha. I am the controller, the supreme controller of every planet. And when you are the supreme controller, then you can enjoy. And if we're not the supreme controller, our enjoyment will always be frustrated. A pure devotee can see the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in everything materially manifest. So that's his vision. Nam stavaram jagamam dekina deki taramuti savatra hoya nija ishta deva spurti. He sees everything as a manifestation of Krishna. That's why if we were listening to or have read the previous verses, the verses we read yesterday, the thing that I picked, or that I heard more than anything else, more than any one thing that Prabhupada explained in the purports that we have to give up if we want to make advancement, was that sense of proprietorship, ownership over anything in the material world. Because to enjoy, we have to own it. We have to have it as our facility. We have to give that up. And along with it, give up the spirit of enjoyment. And understand that everything is a manifestation of Krishna. A pure devotee can see that. He, Krishna, is present there only as a reflection, as his energy. But a pure devotee can realize that in the darkness of material illusion, the only light is the Supreme Lord, who is its support. So the material world exists due to the energy and the support of Krishna. So that's what we were hearing that yesterday and previous days, how the super soul enters, pure Daksha Vishnu, enters the Vishwarupa, the universal form, and gives it life. He maintains it. Just like the soul gives the life to this body. And soon as, the moment the soul leaves the body, even though a body we may be attracted to it, think it's so wonderful. But soon as the soul leaves that body, it begins to decompose, it's burnt, it's buried, it's thrown away. So as is confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, Krishna is the cause of all causes. In the Brahma Samhita it is stated that the Supreme Lord, by his partial or plenary expansions, is present not only within this universe and each and every universe, but in every atom, although he is one without a second. The word adhyam, without a second, which is used in this verse, indicates that although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is represented in everything, including the atoms, he is not divided. There is one Supreme Lord who is everything and everywhere, although he is everything and everywhere by his energies and expansions. His presence in everything is explained in the next verse. Yata jalasta avasa stalastinam vadrishyate swabhavasena tatasuryo jalastena javistita. The presence of the Supreme Lord can be realized just as the sun is realized first as a reflection on water and again as a second reflection on the wall of a room, although the sun itself is situated in the sky. Prabhupada explains. The example given herewith is perfect. The sun is situated in the sky, far, far away from the surface of the earth. But its reflection can be seen in a pot of water in the corner of a room. The room is dark and the sun is far away in the sky, but the sun's reflection on the water illuminates the darkness of the room. A pure devotee can realize the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in everything by the reflection of his energy. So this fact is one of the essential points of the Bhagavatam. In the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, the same point is being made in the second verse. Rite ritanya pratyeta na pratyeta chatmani yad vidvad atmayom vasham yata tamo yata vasha, yato vasha. That just if anything in this world appears, Krishna explains, to be separate from me, because nothing is separate from me, Krishna explains. So if anything seems to be separate from me, know that is the working of my material energy, Maya. And that's Maya's business, specifically that. Illusion. We commonly translate the word Maya as illusion. Maya means that it gives us the vision that something is separate from Krishna. But the sage, the pure devotees, when they see the material world, they see Krishna. Not in a pantheistic way, but they see everything as connected to Krishna. It's Krishna's energy. So that is the way to be safe and happy and peaceful in this material world. Because the material world ultimately is a very dangerous place. Very dangerous place. But if we are with Krishna at every moment, then actually there is no danger. That is the true and only security that we can have. We can think of, take a moment and think, in a material sense, we all feel insecure. Now, to remove that insecurity, what do people do? They get jobs or something, or they try to make money in some way, or they surround themselves with friends and family members. But what would it take to actually make us feel secure? How much money would it take before you feel like I have enough money? If you think right now that if you have $5,000, if you had $5,000, you'd feel secure. When you get $5,000, you want 20, and when you have 20, you want 50, and when you have 50, you want 100, and on and on and on and on and on. But if one actually has purity of heart and devotion for Krishna, yam shyama sundaram achintya guna sarupam, one will see Krishna everywhere. And then if one is with Krishna, then what will be the cause of fear for him? If one is with Krishna, what can be the cause of fear? Like Prahlad Maharaj, when Hiranyakashipu, his father, was trying to kill him, and the father is the one who protects the child, and when your protector is trying to kill you, what could be a greater cause of anxiety? But Prahlad was fearless, and his father was furious because the boy stood up to him. He wasn't afraid at all. So he said to the boy, Hiranyakashipu said to the boy, you're always talking about your God who is protecting you, who is saving you. Where is he? I don't see him. And Prahlad said, he's everywhere. Because that was his vision. He saw Krishna everywhere. Everywhere he looked, he saw Krishna. Because premanjana chorita bhakti valochanena, his eyes were smeared with love. So Hiranyakashipu said, if he's everywhere, is he in this pillar? And he said, if he's everywhere, of course he's in this pillar. That pillar. So Hiranyakashipu said, then I'm going to break this pillar with my sword or fist. And then after that, because I've killed your God, then I will kill you. And at that point, the great commentators on the Bhagavatam describe how Nrisimhadev peeked out from the pillar, just to assure Prahlad, yes, I am here. Yes, Prahlad says, my God is in this pillar. And he showed him, yes, I am in this pillar. Personally, how wonderful. Although God is everywhere, he's everywhere personally. Not impersonally, but personally. How wonderful. So then Nrisimhadev came out, exploded from the pillar, and then ripped apart Hiranyakashipu. So So this is the vision of a pure devotee. So therefore, he alone is peaceful in this world, and happy, and secure. And for him, wherever he is Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha means the spiritual world where there's no anxiety. The self-realized soul, text 13, is thus reflected first in the threefold ego and then in the body, senses, and mind. This is the vision of one who is self-realized. Prabhupada explains, we'll read from the second paragraph of the purport. By the understanding of the pure soul called Satyadrik, that word is used, those words are used in the verse, one can see everything as a reflection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as his energy. This is described also in the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, how to do this. A concrete example can be given in this connection. A conditioned soul sees a very beautiful rose, and he thinks that the nice aromatic flower should be used for his own sense gratification. This is one kind of vision. A liberated soul, however, sees the same flower as a reflection of the Supreme Lord. He thinks, this beautiful flower is made possible by the superior energy of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, it belongs to the Supreme Lord and should be utilized in his service. Again, proprietorship. Thinking that it is mine for my pleasure has to be given up. It is made possible by Krishna and it should be used for him. These are two kinds of vision. The conditioned soul sees the flower for his own enjoyment, and the devotee sees the flower as an object to be used in the service of the Lord. In the same way, one can see the reflection of the Supreme Lord in one's own senses, mind, and body, and everything. With that correct vision, one can engage everything in the service of the Lord. It is stated in the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, the one who has engaged everything, his vital energy, his wealth, his intelligence, and his words in the service of the Lord, or who desires to engage all these in the service of the Lord, no matter how he is situated, is to be considered a liberated soul or satyadrik. That is wonderful. Not only one who is fully engaging his mind, his energy, his wealth, his intelligence, and his words. Not only one who fully engages, but one who has the sincere desire to do so, regardless if he's able to do so. He is liberated. Even if he is able to do nothing, but his desire is pure, he is considered pure by Krishna. Krishna accepts the essence. What does he have in need of our wealth, intelligence, etc.? It's only his anyway. So the essence, the heart of the matter is the desire to serve Krishna and to please Krishna. And we, not we, but me, we tend to want to do things the opposite way. Keep the desire not simple and pure, but put on the external show of doing everything right. So that we have to watch out for. Krishna will accept that too. When we, even a pinch of sincerity, he'll take that and move us forward and purify us. But the real essence is that pure desire of bhakti to please Krishna. Again, describing the liberated soul. 14. Although a devotee appears to be merged in the five material elements, the objects of material enjoyment, the material senses, and material mind and intelligence, he is understood to be awake and to be freed from the false ego. So these are the 25 elements that the Sankhya yogis have discerned as to be the building blocks of the material world. So a devotee looks like he appears to be within these elements because he has a body, he's talking, he has wealth, he's doing this, he deals with the objects of the senses, but actually, because he is a pure devotee, he is missing that thing, he is divested or devoid of that thing that actually entangles one in the material world. And that one thing is the false ego. A devotee means he's living in his real ego, real identity. So even though he may be in the world, he is not of the world, and actually he is not in the world. Devotee means he is not in the world. So he appears to be merged or intermingled with these things, the elements of the material world. But actually, because he's free from false ego, he's only appearing to be as we are. Text 15. The living entity can vividly feel his existence as the seer. Do we experience this? Can we see that we perceive things? Are we the same as dull matter? No, we have consciousness. We are the seer. We are seers. So the living entity can vividly feel his existence as the seer. But because of the disappearance of the ego during the state of deep sleep, he falsely takes himself to be lost, like a man who has lost his fortune and feels distressed, thinking himself to be lost. Prabhupada explains in the purport this verse. These verses are explained from the point of view of Sankhya, and they are quite difficult, and Prabhupada explains them in a very wonderful and transparent ways. How is it? I'll read it again. The living entity can vividly feel his existence as the seer. But because of the disappearance of the ego during the state of deep sleep, he falsely takes himself to be lost, like a man who has lost his fortune and feels distressed, thinking himself to be lost. And that happens when a person loses all his money, when the stock market crashes or something like that. People are building it up and up and up, and they're so thrilled, their fortunes are increasing. And then, if it crashes, people feel like they have lost everything. Or when you lose those things, material things that you're attached to, family, house, you feel like you've lost everything. You're lost, you have no existence. That's how one feels. But actually he does exist. He hasn't lost his existence, but he feels like he's lost his existence. He feels like the world isn't, life isn't worth living, because he's lost those things he's attached to. He thinks he's lost because he's asleep to his actual identity, his real ego. He thinks he is lost, but he is not. So Prabhupada explains in the purport. A person who has lost a great sum of money may think that he is lost, but actually he is not lost. Only his money is lost. But due to his absorption in the money, or identification with the money, he thinks that he is lost. Similarly, when we falsely identify with matter as our field of activities, we think that we are lost, although actually we are not. As soon as a person is awakened to the pure knowledge of understanding that he is an eternal servitor of the Lord, his own real position is revived. A living entity can never be lost. When one forgets his identity in deep sleep, he becomes absorbed in dreams. And he may think himself a different person, or he may think himself lost. But actually his identity is intact. This concept of being lost is due to false ego, false identity, acceptance of a misidentity, misidentifying who we are. And it continues as long as one is not awake to the sense of his existence as an eternal servitor of the Lord. The Mayavadi philosopher's concept of becoming one with the Supreme Lord is another symptom of being lost in false ego. One may falsely claim that he is the Supreme Lord, but actually he is not. This is the last snare of Maya's influence. What does snare mean? Trap. This is Maya's last trap. One takes to spiritual life, and then one thinks that one is the Supreme. One knows that one is a soul, but one thinks one is the Supreme Soul. This is the last snare of Maya's influence upon the living entity, to think oneself equal with the Supreme Lord, or to think oneself to be the Supreme Lord himself is also due to false ego. And then the final verse, and we'll read. When, by mature understanding, one can realize his individuality, then the situation he accepts under false ego becomes manifest to him. So when one realizes who one actually is, then his false, the identity that he's assuming falsely, an illusion, being lost, becomes manifest to him. Just imagine. Well, just sometimes that happens when we're dreaming something in anxiety, and then you wake up, and it's such a relief. Such a relief, because his false identity, which is the source of so much anxiety, becomes manifest to him. Prabhupada's purport in the second paragraph. It is stated in the Ishopanishad that everything belongs to the Lord. Isavasyam idam savam. Everything exists on the energy of the Supreme Lord. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Because everything is produced of His energy and exists on His energy, the energy is not different from Him. But still the Lord declares, I am not there. When one clearly understands one's constitutional position, everything becomes manifest. False egoistic acceptance of things conditions one, whereas acceptance of things as they are makes one liberated. The example given in the previous verse is applicable here. Due to absorption of one's identity in his money, and we do that, we invest our identity into so many material things, and it is such a dangerous thing. It is the source of our misery. We invest our identity into so many things that are far beyond our control. We invest our identity into our car, for example. And then it corrodes, it gets hit, it breaks, the carburetor. What was the last thing that happened to your car?
It leaks oil.
And it's because we think it is us. And it causes, if you feel anxiety and misery, but it has nothing to do with us actually. But it's more than just using it. We invest emotionally our identity into all these things. Especially this, the body. We invest our identity, our emotion, our heart into the body, which is doomed. So that is a bad investment. To invest in something, put everything, put our heart, our consciousness, our whole existence into something that everyone knows is doomed, means that everyone is lining up nothing but suffering for themselves. So not that we shouldn't have cars, and not that we shouldn't have things, but we shouldn't invest our identity in them. And we do invest our identity in them due to illusion. But when we find out who we actually are, then we can deal. That was what was described about the soul who's dealing in the material energy, but he has nothing to do with it. So false egoistic acceptance of things conditions one, whereas acceptance of things as they are makes one liberated. The example given in the previous verse is applicable here. Due to absorption of one's identity in his money, when the money is lost, he thinks that he is also lost. But actually, he is not identical with the money, nor does the money belong to him. So the money doesn't belong to us, and the body doesn't belong to us, nor is it us. When the actual situation is revealed, we understand that the money does not belong to any individual person or living entity, nor is it produced by man. Ultimately, the money is the property of the Supreme Lord, and there is no question of its being lost. But as long as one falsely thinks that I am the enjoyer or I am the Lord, this concept of life continues and one remains conditioned. As soon as this false ego is eliminated, one is liberated. As confirmed in the Bhagavatam, situation and one's real constitutional position is called mukti or liberation. So this process of sankhya that Kapila Muni is describing is a process of, through very deep and constant intellectual discrimination, by the process of purification of the consciousness, through this yoga, one has to be completely secluded, completely celibate, and practice and not become entangled in anything and hear about the Lord ultimately. Then one learns the art of extricating the soul from this entanglement of the 25 material elements. This is the process of Sankhya. Very, very difficult work. Very difficult work. The soul has been completely entangled in matter, anadya bahimuk, since before time. And now, Kapila Muni is explaining that you have to pull it out, to disentangle it. A very, very difficult job. And tomorrow we will hear Devahuti make that very comment. This is practically, she's saying, how is this possible? I can even intellectually understand that I have to give up all sense of proprietorship and be aloof and give up false ego and not invest my identity in things. But I'm so habituated into doing these things. How do I stop? Practically, it feels that if I give up all the elements of my false ego, there won't be anything left. If I give up all those things that I'm attached to and all the things I've invested myself in, what's there left? So she's going to ask a question like that, similar to that. And actually, the Buddhistic people, they say when you do give up all the material attachments, nothing is left. That's what the Buddhists say. But Giriraj does not agree. We will listen to him. What is left when we give up all material attachment is something very, very wonderful. And that something very wonderful is us, the natural consciousness of the soul, ourself, full of bliss. As Krishna is full of bliss, full of knowledge and full of eternal existence, as Krishna is full of eternal existence and bliss and knowledge. That is us. In relationship to Krishna. Okay, thank you very much. Kapila Muni ki jai, Devahuti ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Giriraj Govardhana ki jai. So, we should distribute prasadam. What? Who made this? You. Dekun.